चैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकतामय्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथां वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते तप्त काञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरि वृषभानो श्रुते देवि प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वञ्च कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासन्धोभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा लाइक टू वेलकम ऑल ऑफ यू ऑल टू द संडे फीस्ट प्रोग्राम सो टुडे I'm going to be speaking on the saints of South India and no theme, just free flow. I'm going to speak many stories of the great saints of the Shiva Vaishnava Sampradaya, South India. And you'll find that each of these stories have so much depth and so much wisdom in them. And more than anything else, you will find one very important quality that stands out in all these stories, the quality of humility of all these acharyas. Now, the great devotees we're going to talk about are, each one of them are extremely powerful associates of the Lord, very, very empowered, have achieved so much in their stay in the material world, more than anything else, their devotion is exemplifying. But at the same time, if you look at the way in which these devotees, they deal with one another and the mood that they carry, it really brings out so much about the concept of bhakti yoga we are all trying to practice. So having given that background, we'll start with the narration of the stories of the Shri Vaishnava Acharyas. There was one particular disciple of Ramanujacharya whose name was Vattapurna. He was also known as Andhrapurna. He was also known as Vadugunambi. So he had a very specific role. Of the many things that he would play, one of the very important sevas or services he would do was boiling the milk of Ramanujacharya. Every day, his service was to boil milk of Ramanujacharya and offer it to him. So, he was a completely surrendered soul and he had a great amount of love and affection for Ramanujacharya. So, one day, he was boiling milk for Ramanujacharya and there was a procession of Ranganath passing by. Now, in South India, the deities of the whichever city, the deities are taken out every evening on a procession. And people line up on the streets to have darshan of the Lord and do, worship the Lord. So everyone generally leaves their house and stands on the streets when the deities are passing. It's a mark of respect. So he was boiling milk at that point when the procession of Ranganath was taking place. And there was music, there was Brahmanas chanting mantras, and so many things going on. So Ramanujacharya, he told, Andhrapurna, why didn't you go and have darshan of the Lord? So this person, he replies, he says, you can go and take darshan of your Lord, but I am busy boiling milk for you. I can't go anywhere. So Ramanujacharya was completely bewildered, that he's not going to have darshan and he's boiling milk over here. So when Ramanujacharya would be having darshan of Ranganath or the deities, Andhrapurna, instead of having darshan of the deities, he'll keep looking at Ramanujacharya only. So Ramanujacharya asked him, what's wrong with you? Why don't you have darshan of the deities? So he would say, I'm having darshan of my deities, you have darshan of your deities. So that is the kind of relationship that he had with Ramanujacharya, and he had great love and affection for his spiritual master. One time, Ramanujacharya, he's Hare Krishna. So one time, Ramanujacharya's feet were washed, and this person, Andhrapurna, he took the Charanamrita of Ramanujacharya, the water that was washing the feet of Ramanujacharya, and he drank it. And after drinking the Charanamrita, he was putting the water on his head also. Ramanujacharya said, you don't put the water that washed my feet on your head. That's not right. So he, agreed and he didn't put the water on his head. Then later on, they went to have darshan of Ranganath. And while taking Charanamrita of Ranganath, after taking Charanamrita, he didn't put the Charanamrita on his head. So Ramanujacharya said, why didn't you put Charanamrita on your head? That's a mark of respect. He said, for me, your Charanamrita and Lord Charanamrita is the same. If you're not allowing me to put your Charanamrita on my head, I don't want to put the Lord Charanamrita on my head also. So one time they were traveling from one place to another, and Andhrapurna, he was packing the bag of Ramanujacharya, and Ramanujacharya had deities that he would carry everywhere. So in the bag, there was all the paraphernalia of the deities, plates and the deity box and everything was there inside a bag. And now he was Andhrapurna, while he was packing the bag of Ramanujacharya, he was thinking he didn't have place to keep the footwear of Ramanujacharya. So he put it along with the deity paraphernalia. So later on, when they reached the destination, the bag was opened and Ramanujacharya saw his footwear along with the deity paraphernalia. He was shocked. He said, how offensive this is. How can you put my footwear along with the deity paraphernalia? This is great offense to the Lord. And Andhrapurna, he says, he tells his guru, he says, my dear master, according to me, I've kept all the things of the Lord together. So he says, what difference it makes? Your footwear, the Lord's paraphernalia, everything according to me belongs to the Lord only. So I put all the things that belong to the Lord together. So Ramanujacharya was very highly impressed with the kind of devotion that he had towards his spiritual master. So Andhrapurna, he was so much dependent on his spiritual master that he would actually make fun of Ramanujacharya's other disciples. So Ramanujacharya had many disciples, out of which Kuresh and Dasharathi, they were very powerful disciples. And Andhrapurna, he would have conversations with them jokingly. And he would tell them, when you go to the temple, you worship Ranganath. But when you come back to the ashram, you worship Ramanuja. You're like having your feet on two banks of the river, One foot is on this bank and one foot is on this bank. I have both my feet on one bank only, So like that he would make fun of his, God brothers. Ramanujacharya had many disciples, out of which one very special person who joined him, his name was Govinda. So, Govinda was actually the cousin brother of Ramanujacharya. And at some point, Govinda got disconnected from Ramanujacharya. They studied together in a school of Yadav Prakash. They were studying Sanskrit together. But at some point, they got disconnected. Govinda, he went to Kashi, and in Kashi he found a Shivalinga in the river, and he thought that I've been instructed, Lord Shiva personally wants me to worship him. So he started worshipping Shivalinga, and he got completely disconnected from Ramanacharya's life. But after many years, somehow he got reconnected, and he met a Vaishnav Acharya whose name was Shailapurna, Sri Shailapurna, and he became his disciple, and he started staying with him in Tirupati. So one day, Ramanacharya visited the Tirupati temple, and as he went to Tirupati, he was staying on the bottom of the hill. And all the devotees started requesting Ramanacharya that you should climb up the hill. Ramanacharya felt he was very unqualified to put his foot, feet on Anantashesh. So, but he said, if you don't climb, nobody is going to climb. And who will have darshan of Balaji? So, after the devotees said that, Ramanacharya decided to climb the hill. And he, while climbing the hill, he made a prayer. He started praying, my dear Lord, when a conditioned soul goes back to the spiritual world, as soon as he reaches Vaikuntha, the first thing that happens when he reaches the inner section of the Vaikuntha planet is that Lord Vishnu is sitting on the throne in Vaikuntha. The living entity who comes into Vaikuntha, he is called to climb on the lap of the Lord and sit on his lap. So Ramanacharya says, in my understanding, Balaji is sitting on top of Vaikuntha. And for me, climbing this hill is like climbing the lap of the throne of the Supreme Lord and sitting on his lap. So just like the living entity is allowed to climb on the throne of the Lord and sit on his lap, similarly I am considering this as a permission for me to climb on the hill. And when he climbed up, Ramanacharya, he was welcomed by Sri Shailapurna. Now, Sri Shailapurna personally came to greet Ramanacharya and welcome him and offer him, all the hospitality. So, Ramanacharya was he was feeling very bad. In fact, he was feeling very embarrassed. Because according to him, Sri Shailapurna is like his guru. So, he went to Sri Shailapurna and he asked him, my dear master, why did you personally come? You could have sent some servant, you could have sent some assistant to get all these things to me. Why you had to come? Sri Shailapurna gave a very interesting answer. He said, I looked in all of Tirupati to find somebody smaller than me. But I could not find anyone smaller than me, so I personally came. I mean, you can imagine the mood and the mindset of these acharyas that in spite of being such exalted people, they consider themselves to be insignificant. Ramanacharya stayed in Tirupati for 3 days. Actually, He was only planning to stay for one night. But Sri Shailapurna told him, anytime you go anywhere to a holy place, you have to stay at least for 3 days. So he stayed for 3 days. But he didn't want to contaminate the place. So he didn't eat, he didn't drink anything for 3 full days. Just so that he doesn't contaminate the place. So finally, after the 3 days of darshan, Ramanacharya came down and he was staying down. So while Ramanacharya was on the hill, he observed a few very funny incidents that happened there. He saw that Govinda, he would serve his spiritual master Sri Shailapurna very lovingly, but he would also do some mischievous things. He would prepare a bed for Sri Shailapurna and he would himself sleep on that bed. So Ramanacharya went and reported to Sri Shailapurna that your disciple makes a bed for you and he himself sleeps on it. So Sri Shailapurna went and asked Govinda, why do you do that? He said, my dear Lord, I make a bed for you, but I want to make sure that there is nothing that pricks you. So I first lie down on the bed to see if the bed is comfortable enough for you. One day, Ramanacharya saw Govinda doing something very interesting. His hand was inside the mouth of a snake. So Ramanacharya was thinking, why would somebody put his hand inside the mouth of the snake? So he went and told Govinda, what are you doing? He said, there is a thorn stuck in his mouth and I am trying to remove the thorn. So Govinda had such compassion for even a snake. So when Ramanacharya came down the hill, Sri Shailapurna told him that I have heard of the inner meanings of the Ramayana from Yamunacharya and I would like to share those inner meanings with you. So Ramanacharya stayed down and every day Sri Shailapurna would come down the hill and speak to Ramanacharya for hours together. And he shared with Ramanacharya 24 ways of seeing the Ramayana. So it took one whole year to complete the whole series of discussions. So as Ramanacharya was preparing to leave Tirupati and go back to Srirangam, Sri Shailapurna said, "I want to give you a gift. Ask for anything you want. I'll give you." So Ramanacharya, he was really in love with Govinda by that time. He saw the devotional qualities of this person. So he said, "Please give me Govinda." So Sri Shailapurna said, "Take Govinda with you." So Ramanacharya took, Govinda was his cousin brother also. He was very close associate now. And he had really developed a lot of love and affection for him. So Ramanacharya took Govinda along with him. Govinda was very sad and disheartened that he is not able to serve his guru, Sri Shailapurna, and he has to go with Ramanuja. Though he loved Ramanuja also. So the result of his sadness was that he stopped eating, stopped drinking anything. He was really becoming sick. So Ramanuja finally realized that this person cannot survive without his guru's association. So he told him, "You go back to Sri Shailapurna and you serve him only there." So Govinda was so happy when he heard that. He ran back. I mean, now running back is not like going to Chopati Beach or something. You know? Srirangam to Tirupati is like, you know, hundreds of miles. So he actually went walking for days and days and days together, without eating anything, without drinking anything, so that he can go back and serve his guru. And when he reached Sri Shailapurna's ashram, Sri Shailapurna was eating his meals and his wife was serving him. And when his wife saw Govinda come in such a bad shape, she immediately wanted to feed him. Sri Shailapurna said that once a cow is given in donation, nobody feeds the cow grass. Tell him to go back to whoever his master is. Can you imagine? No welcome drinks, no hospitality, nothing. Right that moment, Govinda turned around, walked back from Tirupati back to Srirangam, and then surrendered his life to Ramanacharya and lived all his life with Ramanacharya. Govinda was married when he was very small. So in those days, there would be child marriages. And at a later point, when the girl and the boy grow up, they come together again. So Govinda's parents and his mother-in-law, they approach Ramanujacharya and they said that, you know, Govinda is married, he should be with his wife. So what Govinda said was, "I'll be with her. If you find me anytime free of my service with my spiritual master, that time I'll spend with her." They observed for a few days. Not even one moment he is free, you know. All the time he is doing seva. So finally they went and complained to Ramanacharya that at least allow him to spend some time with his wife. Ramanacharya said, "Go and do your duties. You spend time with your wife." So then Govinda agreed. Now instruction is given. So then he spent one night with his wife. And the next day Ramanacharya met him. And Ramanacharya asked him that, "What did you do?" He said, "Whole night we were discussing Harikatha, you know. All night, can you imagine, you know?" So Ramanacharya said, "Come on, you should spend some loving moments with your wife alone." Govinda said, "I tried my best. But every time I would actually realize that the Paramatma is inside me and the Paramatma is observing me. So how can I be alone with her, you know? You told me to be alone with her, but I have no opportunity to be alone with her." So Ramanacharya realized that this person is not meant for Grahastha Ashram at all, you know. And then Ramanacharya gave him sannyas. And from that point, he came to be known as Yambar Jiyar. So Govinda had great love and affection for Ramanujacharya. At one point, Govinda had gone for Madhukari, for begging, you know, different houses. And one time, the devotee saw that this person, Govinda, is standing in front of the house of a prostitute. For like hours together, he's standing over there. So they went and complained to Ramanacharya that, you know, look what your disciple is doing. So Ramanacharya called Govinda and he asked him, "What are you doing standing in front of that prostitute's house?" Govinda replies that, "My dear master, when I was passing by that house while I was doing Madhukari, I heard a beautiful voice singing your glories. So he said, the moment I heard your glories being sung, I could not resist. I had to stand there and hear. So for hours together, he was hearing the glories of Ramanujacharya. So Ramanujacharya was so happy and so inspired by the attitude of Govinda, he started glorifying Govinda like anything in front of all his disciples. Now, when a spiritual master glorifies you in front of others, how do you behave? You feel, you know, very embarrassed and very ashamed, basically, that spiritual master is glorifying you in front of everyone. Govinda, he did opposite. He said, yes, what you're saying is right, you know. He's like nodding for everything. So Ramanujacharya is glorifying him. Govinda is saying, yes, you're right, you know. So Ramanujacharya got bewildered. He said, Govinda, when somebody glorifies you, you're not supposed to feel proud and you're not supposed to say, yes, you're right, you know. So Govinda explained, Govinda said that, my dear master, I was completely a deviated person. All of y'all, my spiritual masters, brought me into the Vaishnava fold and inspired me to practice bhakti. And whatever I'm doing is by your inspiration. So today, when you are glorifying me, it is not glorifying me, but it is actually glorifying you. And therefore, the more people glorify me, the more happier I become, because I know it is not my glory. So Ramanujacharya was really impressed with the mindset of this divine personality. Ramanujacharya had another disciple whose name was Dasharathi. He was in fact the son of Ramanujacharya's sister. So he and Kuresh were considered to be Ramanujacharya's most senior disciples. And in fact, when Ramanujacharya took sannyas, Ramanujacharya declared, sannyasi is supposed to be renounced, right? You have to give up all attachments. Ramanujacharya said, after taking sannyas, I give up all my attachments except one attachment. My attachment to Dasharathi, that I can't give up, you know. So can you imagine how much Ramanujacharya loved him? So Dasharathi had a great affection for Ramanujacharya. So at one point, Ramanujacharya received the instruction for the Charma Shloka of Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Parityajya, the inner meaning of that from his spiritual master Goshtipurna. And Ramanujacharya shared that inner meaning with Kuresh. So Dasharathi, when he heard that Ramanujacharya shared the inner meaning of the Charma Shloka with Kuresh, he said, I also want to hear. So Ramanujacharya told him that, you know, I can't give you the inner meaning of the Charma Shloka. You go to Goshtipurna and ask directly. So Dasharathi goes all the way to Goshtipurna, serves Goshtipurna. So when he goes and asks Goshtipurna for the inner meaning of the Charma Shloka, he doesn't reply only. 6 months, he is waiting over there, trying to get a reply, but he doesn't reply. So 6 months, he is serving Goshtipurna. Why? To get answer to one question. I mean, all of us have questions in our life, but if we don't get answer, we forget the question only, you know. 6 months he is serving over there just to get answer to that one question. And after 6 months, he goes and asks Goshtipurna. And Goshtipurna tells him that only a person who is free from 3 faults can get a deeper understanding of this shloka. He says the 3 faults are a person born in an aristocratic family, a person who is having great pride of being a great scholar, and a person who is very proud of having many followers. A person who has these 3 faults cannot understand the inner meaning of this shloka. So he says, go and ask your spiritual master Ramanujacharya whether you have these 3 faults or no. Now he goes back all the way, you know, to Ramanujacharya and asks him whether I have these 3 faults or no. So Ramanujacharya says, no, you don't have any of these 3 faults. Exactly at that time, when Ramanujacharya says that you don't have any any of these faults, Ramanujacharya's another guru, whose name is Mahapurna, he has a daughter whose name is Atulai. She comes to Ramanujacharya and she tells him all her household problems. You know, I mean, maid goes missing, this problem is there, my mother-in-law does this to me. Can you imagine? 500 years later also, the problems are all same. You know? And 500 years later also, people go to sadhus to tell their household problems. You know? No, nothing really has changed. So Ramanacharya, he hears all the problems of Atulai, and then finally he tells her, you take this person with you as your servant, you know, and he gives Dasharathi to Atulai. Now Dasharathi, he is a great scholar. He is exalted personality. Quietly he goes to Atulai and he does all the household work, washing clothes, washing her vessels, you know, cooking, doing all kinds of menial things. 6 months he spends in Atulai's house being her servant. Nobody in that area understands who this person is. Nobody in that area understands why he is doing this service. They only understand that Ramanacharya has solved Atulai's problem. He has given her a servant. Now they don't know the history behind it, the background behind who this person is and all. Neither they bother to find out. Hey, somebody who gets a free servant, why will they find out all details, right? So Dasharathi was serving as a menial servant for 6 months. So 6 months he spent over there serving Goshtipurna. 6 months he's spending here serving, you know, this girl. After 6 months, there was a scholar that comes into that village, and he is there's a discussion going on, and this person is propounding something philosophical. And Dasharathi overhears this conversation. And he finds out a fault in it. He stands up and he says, your explanation is wrong. There's a tinge of Mayavad in that explanation. The scholar, he gets very angry. He says, who are you? You're a servant in Atulai's house. You're a cook. How can you start talking about, you know, deep understanding of philosophy? Dasharathi gets up and gives a full-fledged answer of the detailed meaning of that verse. And then people get bewildered. They realize that this person is not ordinary. They realize that this person has to be a great scholar. And then they find out all the details and they realize that this person is Dasharathi, the foremost disciple of Ramanujacharya. And then finally they all go back to Ramanujacharya, fall at his feet and tell him, you know, please, because Dasharathi is not ready to go back only. Because Dasharathi says, Ramanujacharya has told me to be her servant, I am going to be her servant, you know. So they all go back and fall at Ramanujacharya's feet and beg him to please take Dasharathi back. And then Ramanacharya brings back Dasharathi and then he gives him an explanation of the inner meaning of the Charma Shloka Bhagavad Gita. Now, for all of us in Hare Krishna movement era, we don't know any of these things. 1 year of tapasya to understand the meaning of one shloka. You come to one Prerna lecture, you come to one Sunday feast, a Bhagavatam class, and then you get so many deeper inner meanings of so many verses. But the question is, what is our capacity to digest those inner meanings? What is our capacity to actually realize those inner meanings? The capacity to digest and realize those inner meanings doesn't come just by hearing or just by intellectual analysis. It comes by menial service. When you serve the great devotees, when you serve the great teachers, in the way they like them, like to be served, in the way they want you to serve, sometimes it may be inconvenient and sometimes it may be really frustrating. But the kind of attitude that Dasharathi had, that attitude really brought out the depth of understanding and his ability to digest that knowledge. One day, Ramanacharya had gone to a particular place which is known as Mithila Shaligram. So this place was a place where most people were not really Vaishnavas. They were not really connected with Vaishnavism. There was completely Mayavad pervading all through. Very few people actually came to hear Ramanujacharya. So Ramanujacharya was very disturbed that, you know, nobody is really interested in the deeper understanding of Vaishnava Siddhanta. So he told Dasharathi that there is a pond over here on the outskirts of this particular village. And this pond supplies water to the entire village. So all the drinking water, all the, you know, water that he used for cooking is all from this pond. Ramanujacharya told Dasharathi, go and wash your legs in this pond. So Dasharathi went and washed his legs. He had no idea what Ramanujacharya told him this. And slowly the water in the pond, everybody started drinking and all that. In a few days, practically everyone in the village came and surrendered to Ramanujacharya. By the power of the dust of the lotus feet of Dasharathi, the entire village was transformed. So even today in that village, so Ramanujacharya was so happy seeing the transformation, He said, now this village is fit to be called as Mithila Shaligram. And in that village, even today, there is a huge deity of Dasharathi with his leg inside the pond only. You know. So, these disciples and these great devotees connected to Ramanacharya, connected to the South Indian Acharyas, have such depth in the way they have understood the concept of surrender, the concept of Vaishnav Siddhanta, that it really brings clarity in our mind when we practice spirituality, practice Krishna consciousness. Much later, when Kuresh was towards the last phase of his life, there are some very beautiful conversations that happen between Ramanacharya and Kuresh that bring out some deeper meanings. So, Ramanacharya, one time he went to Kuresh's house and he was told that Kuresh, so there are some devotees who actually had an ability to converse with the Lord. So, one devotee told Kuresh that in this very lifetime, Kuresh is going back to the spiritual world, to Vaikuntha. And not just that, anybody who is connected to Kuresh will also go back to the spiritual world. So when Ramanacharya, Kuresh's spiritual master, when he heard this, he started dancing. He took his cloth and started, you know, rotating it in the air and started dancing and shouting like anything. So all the disciples of Ramanacharya were very surprised. You know, they've never seen their spiritual master behave in such a way, you know, so ecstatically and so wildly, you know. So they went and asked Ramanacharya, what happened? Why are you so happy? He said, I'm so happy that Kuresh is going back to the spiritual world in this very lifetime. And not just that, it is said that anybody who is connected to Kuresh is also going to go back. I am a spiritual master, so I am also connected to Kuresh. So definitely I am going to the spiritual world, you know. So can you imagine, generally when somebody is superior, there is a certain air of superiority that permeates. And, you know, it's very difficult for a superior person to acknowledge that his deliverance is going to be through somebody, you know, younger than him. Srila Prabhupada would often say that one disciple of mine, you know, will take me to the spiritual world. Just one disciple who is a perfect devotee, he can qualify. So, Kuresh, when he was thinking like this, so Ramanacharya becomes very disturbed by the fact that Kuresh is on the last phase of his life. So he goes to Kuresh and asks him that, you know, why are you going before me? You're supposed to be my disciple. So disciple should go after the spiritual master. Why are you going before me? This is not right. So Kuresh was lost in thoughts. So Ramanacharya asked him, what are you thinking? Why didn't you reply to my question? So Kuresh says, my dear master, I've been having a few dreams. And the last few days, in the dreams that I've been seeing, I've been seeing that the eternal associates of the Lord are coming from the spiritual world, from the Vaikuntha Dham, to receive me. They're extending their hands and they're calling me to the spiritual world. And he said, they're welcoming me into the spiritual world, and I was surprised to see that in the spiritual world, there are no rules and regulations. The Vaikunthavasis are exalted, much more powerful and much more senior than me. But over there in the spiritual world, everybody is equal. So he said that in spite of being so exalted, they're coming all the way to the material world to welcome an insignificant person like me. And I was thinking that if I go after you, then you will also come to receive me. He said, I don't want that to happen. He said, I will go first, then I will come with a whole big welcome party to receive you. That is the right way. That is the appropriate way. Right? So Ramanacharya was so touched by Kuresh's mood. But Kuresh is not just thinking of serving him in this life, but after dying in the spiritual world also, he's thinking of serving him only. So this attitude of Kuresh really melts the heart of Ramanacharya. So he tells Kuresh that in all the three worlds, there can be no devotee, no person who matches you. And then he actually talks about how exalted Quraysh is. And Quraysh, at that point of time, he offers prayers to Ramanujacharya. And the prayers that Quraysh offers, that becomes like the pranam mantra of Ramanujacharya. And all the devotees, after that, from that point onwards, actually chant that pranam mantra of Ramanujacharya, which was recited by Quraysh. There was a devotee whose name was Pundarik. And he was living in a place known as Mahabalipuram in South India. And he had a beautiful garden. And one day he found beautiful lotuses growing in that garden. So he made a garland of lotuses. And he wanted to offer the garland of lotuses to the Supreme Lord. Somehow he came to know that the Lord is sleeping on the milk ocean, and the milk ocean is beyond the seven oceans. Now he was a very simple man. Now he had no idea what this milk ocean is. He had no idea of the concept of going to the spiritual world after death. He had no idea like that. All he knew was beyond the seven oceans, the milk ocean is there. And he knew that he wanted to give the garland to the milk, to the Lord who is staying in the milk ocean. So what he started doing was, he started taking palmfuls of ocean water and throwing it outside. He said, the only way I can reach the milk ocean is if I cross the seven oceans. And the only way I can cross the seven oceans is if I empty the seven oceans, you know. So he was actually literally all day long taking water from the ocean and throwing it out, you know. And seeing this attitude of this devotee, Pundarik, the Lord was so touched that the Lord actually appeared in front of him. And when the Lord appeared, the Lord of course, he appeared as an elderly Brahmana. And he told him, my dear Pundarik, you're so tired of, emptying the ocean like this. He said, I also want to help you in emptying the ocean. So he said, but before I help you, I'm very hungry. Can you get some food for me to eat? So Pundarik ran to get food. And when he came back, he saw that the Brahmana had disappeared. And in place of the Brahmana, the Supreme Lord was lying down not on the ocean, but on the seashore. And he was lying down on the floor, literally. And the garland that he had made of lotus flowers was on the neck of the Lord. And that particular form of the Lord, it's known. And when this Pundarik had gone running, he went and got the easiest thing to get in South India. And that is dahi rice. You know, he got like a cup of dahi rice to offer to the Lord. And when he came back, he saw that the Brahmana disappeared and the Lord was lying on the floor, on the ground. From that point onwards, that particular deity of the Lord that manifested over there, he is known as Stala Shayana Swami. And the standard offering for that deity in Mahabalipuram is dahi rice. Every offering they offer dahi rice only to him, you know, commemorating Pundarik's mood and devotion. There's another very exalted acharya whose stories are, really glorified in the Shri Sampradaya. So there was a sage whose name was Bhargava Rishi. And this Bhargava Rishi, he actually appeared as the incarnation of Sudarshan Chakra. And Bhargava Rishi, he was performing tapasya one time. And Indra was very disturbed. Indra gets disturbed when sages perform great tapasya. So he sent an apsara whose name was Kanaka Angi. And both this Bhargava Rishi and this apsara united together and they gave birth to a child. Now, this child, naturally, Kanaka Angi was not interested in taking care of the child. Bhargava Rishi, he didn't even know that this child existed. So Kanaka Angi threw this child into a bamboo bush. And she went away. She went back to the heavens. So this child was an extremely exalted child. Not an ordinary child at all. And this child fell into the bamboo field. He was taken care by Bhudevi personified. And slowly the child started growing up. And at some point, Jagannath, the Supreme Lord, manifested in front of the child and touched him. By the touch of the Supreme Lord, the child actually never ever felt hungry, never felt thirsty. Completely self-satisfied child. And eventually there was an old man and woman who came across this child crying in the bamboo fields, and they took the child home. So at some point, as the child was growing, there was a Shudra couple that came to take care of this child. So when they came to take care of the child, they came and gave boiled milk to this child. And when the child drank a little bit of that milk and told them, "You drink the rest of the milk." So when this old couple drank the rest of the milk, instantly they became young. They changed their form, they became young men and women. So this child, he eventually came to be known as Bhakti Sar, one of the very exalted Vaishnavas in the Sri Sampradaya. And the old couple who got transformed into youth again, they eventually gave birth to another child whose name was Kanikannan. Now Kanikannan became a die-hard disciple of Bhakti Sar. Now can you imagine, Kanikannan was born because of Bhakti Sar's mercy, you know, by drinking the milk. His parents drank the milk that Bhakti Sar drank. So Kanikannan became like a die-hard disciple of Bhakti Sar. Wherever Bhakti Sar would go, Kanikannan would also go. And these two became very exalted acharyas in the Sri Sampradaya. At one point, Bhakti Sar, of course, he became a great scholar. He became a very powerful personality. At one point, Bhakti Sar was absorbed in his devotion. He was traveling and he came to a place known as Kanchipuram. So while he was in Kanchipuram, he performed great austerities. And his disciple Kanikannan was also there. And while they were meditating on the Lord, there was one old lady. She would come to the ashram and clean the ashram. She would put, you know, rangoli in the ashram. She would do all kinds of seva. And she had no expectation whatsoever. Every day she would come and do service and she would go away. One day she came to Bhakti Sar and told him that, "I am not able to put rangoli because my hands have become stiff. When you become old, your hands start becoming stiff." She said, "I can't do this service anymore." Bhakti Sar, he gave her a benediction and instantly made her young again. So from a 60-year-old woman, she became a 16-year-old girl. Sudden transformation. You know. So when she got her youth back, the king of that place, he was known as Pallava Raja. So he became very attracted to this young girl and he proposed to get married to her. And then, you know, he got married to this old lady, become a young girl now. You know, complex, you know. So after the marriage, the king realized that actually she's an old lady, but she's got transformed into, you know, becoming so young. The king said, "I am also becoming old. I also want to become young, you know. You call your guru and tell him to make me also young." Now this lady, his wife, she said, "I'm sorry, my guru, my spiritual master Bhakti Sar is not like that. He's not going to make you young just because you want to become young, you know." So she said, "Maybe we can talk to his disciple Kanikannan. His Kanikannan has all the powers that Bhakti Sar has." And she said that when Kanikannan sings the devotional songs, even trees that are dying, they get back life. Flowers that have fallen down, they actually come back to life and, you know, get attached back to the trees. So he said, "Go and get anybody. Bhakti Sar, Kanikannan, get anyone. I want to become young again." You know? So they went and got Kanikannan. And this lady, you know, she requested, "My husband wants to become young again. Can you help him?" You know, Kanikannan said, "See, we don't do such things. People who are materialistic, we don't help them get any kind of benefits." So the king became very angry. And he told Kanikannan, "Get lost from my kingdom. You're in my kingdom, Kanchipuram. You don't know. Get out from here." Kanikannan said, "Fine, I'm not attached to your kingdom, I'm going." So Kanikannan went and told his guru, Bhakti Sar, that, you know, "I've been kicked out of the kingdom, I can't stay here." Bhakti Sar told Kanikannan, "If you can't stay here, why I'll stay here? I'm also going." So Bhakti Sar and Kanikannan, both of them winded up and they started leaving Kanchipuram. Before they left, they went to the deity, you know, the name of the deity is Yathotkari Vishnu. And they went and told the Lord that, "My dear Lord, we have been kicked out of Kanchipuram. We are leaving the place. We just came to say bye to you." The Lord, he told them, he spoke to them, and he said, if you all are going, what will I do staying here? I'm also coming, you know. The Lord actually winded up his snake bed, you know, made into a roll, put it under his arms, and he also left. So when Kanikandan and Bhaktisar left, and then Yathotkari Vishnu left, all the other deities of Kanchipuram, you know, they were Narsingadev, and then, you know, Varadaraj, and all of them one by one started leaving Kanchipuram, you know. So when, can you imagine what a procession, you know. These two devotees in the front, all deities one by one in the behind, you know. And then not just the Vishnu deities, all the other demigod deities also started leaving, you know. Hanumanji started leaving, Shivaji started leaving. And when all of them left, the sun and the moon, they said, what will we do in Kanchipuram? They also left. And it became utter darkness. And this king had no idea what's happening. And he went and realized that Bhaktisar and Kanikandan have gone. Everything has gone. He went and fell at their feet. And, you know, he begged them to come back. And then finally, after a lot of pleading and begging, all of them decided to come back. And then all the deities also came back. So to commemorate this particular event, something very interesting happened. When this deity Yathotkari Vishnu came back, just to commemorate this event, Yathotkari Vishnu put his snake bed in the other direction. Generally, the snake, the face of Anantaji is on the left-hand side. And the tail is on the right hand side. In this particular temple, this is the only temple in the entire universe where the head of Anantashesh is on the right hand side and the tail is on the left hand side. Just to show that for the sake of his devotees, the Lord is ready to do anything. There was one particular place where Bhaktisar, he went to this town known as Mahavyagrapuri. And there were very exalted Brahmanas living over there. And when Bhaktisar came there, this Brahmanas are thinking, you know, he's a Shudra, he's a, you know, a low class person. And Bhaktisar, he was doing Madhukari around the temple. And as these Brahmanas were very proud of themselves and they were talking ill about Bhaktisar, suddenly the head pujari in the temple, he saw something very interesting. He saw that whichever direction Bhaktisar is moving in, that direction the deity's head also is moving. Can you imagine? Bhaktisar is going all around doing Madhukari and the Lord's head is turning like this, you know. The pujari was totally bewildered. The pujari was not able to understand why the Lord's head is turning like this and like this, you know. And then he found out that the Lord's head is turning according to Bhaktisar's movements. And that's when all the Brahmanas saw that Bhaktisar is such an exalted personality, that is, the deity is actually turning his head to keep track of his movements. And then they all decided to actually take shelter of Bhaktisar and become his disciples. And Bhaktisar, he went to another temple, another city, which is known as Kumbakonam. And there he was having darshan of this deity of Lord Vishnu known as Sharangapani. And Vishnu, this particular deity is of, again, the Lord lying on a snake bed. So he was praying to the Lord. He said, oh my Lord, you are the person who walked around the earth once. And you are the person who crossed the ocean to kill Ravan. And now you are so tired that you are going to sleep. You know. So like that, you know, Bhaktisar was glorifying the Lord and, you know, appreciating the Lord's divine form. Now when Bhaktisar was praying like this, the Lord became so inspired hearing his prayers, the Lord actually sat up. To hear, you know, from his sleeping position, he sat up. And when Bhaktisar saw that Lord is sitting up, Bhaktisar said, no, my dear Lord, don't get up. And you will find that deity is a very interesting position. It is neither sleeping nor sitting. It is in between, you know. So the Lord was, you know, he reciprocates. This particular deity is just to show that how the Lord is completely under the control of his devotees. And that is how, you know, the reciprocation between the Lord and his devotees is. There are many other beautiful stories connected to the Sri Sampradaya. There's one particular devotee whose name, without mentioning the stories of the Shivaishnava Acharyas, the South Indian Acharyas, never ends. These are stories of Kanchipurna. So Kanchipurna was a very powerful personality and he lived in Kanchipuram serving this deity of Varadaraj. And the relationship between Kanchipurna and Varadaraja was very interesting. Kanchipurna every day would fan the deities And he was not born in an exalted Brahmin family or anything like that. He was born in a simple Shudra family. Not a great scholar or anything like that. But the connection that both of them had was amazing. Kanchipurna would fan Varadaraj all day long. And they would have conversations. Can you imagine? You know? Ye andar ki baat hai, you know? What conversation they had, only they knew, you know. And they would constantly talk with each other. And anybody who needed to know anything, they would come and ask Kanchipurna, and the Lord would give answers. So one person came and asked Kanchipurna, please ask the Lord. Very simple man, you know, very simple person. What a great devotion is. He went and asked Kanchipurna, can you please ask Varadaraj, will I ever come back to the spiritual world? So Kanchipurna went and asked, this person wants to know, will I ever come back to the spiritual world? And immediately Varadaraj said that this very lifetime he will come back to the spiritual world. So Kanchipurna was very, very happy to hear this, that this person will come back to the spiritual world in this very lifetime. He said, because the Lord said, because he is attached to you, and anyone who is attached to you becomes very dear to me, definitely he'll come back to the spiritual world. So Kanchipurna went and told this person. This person became very happy. So the next day, the Kanchipurna had a thought. But somehow he was hesitating to ask the Lord. But the Supreme Lord is the Paramatma within the heart. He told Kanchipurna, you have a question, ask. Kanchipurna said, no, my dear Lord, it's okay. No, not really important. Varadaraj said, no, please ask the question. I know what you're thinking, but I want you to ask. So Kanchipurna said, my dear Lord, my question is, sometime back you said, you know, you told that simple person that, you know, he will come back to the spiritual world because he is, you know, connected, attached to me. My question is, will I come back to the spiritual world? So the Lord tells him, see, as far as we our discussions are concerned, and as far as you doing service to me is concerned, all that is fine. But as far as coming back to the spiritual world, definitely you are not going to come back. Kanchipurna was bewildered. He said, my dear Lord, why am I not qualified to come back to the spiritual world? He said, coming back to the spiritual world, for somebody to come back to the spiritual world, you should be serving the devotees of the Lord. You are only serving me, but you are doing nothing to serve the devotees. Therefore, you can't come back. Instantly, Kanchipurna put the fan down. And he said, I am going from here, you know. Instantly, Kanchipurna, he didn't even think a second time. He instantly put the fan down. Varadaraj said, what about me? Who's going to find me now, you know? Kanchipurna said, I don't know about finding you. I am going to serve some devotee now. And Kanchipurna left from there and he went to the house of Mahapurna in Srirangam. And he disguises himself as a coward boy. And for 6 months, he serves Mahapurna menially, taking care of his cows, taking care of menial services, taking care of the fields and like that. One particular day, it was a very heavy rains. And Kanchipurna got completely wet. And after, because he was wet, and the only clothes that he was wearing was wet, he removed those clothes, and then he wore his Vaishnav clothes. At that time, Mahapurna was actually thinking that this coward boy must be wet, so let me go and give him a fresh set of clothes. And when he came there and he saw that he is dressed up as a Vaishnav, that's when he realized that this is not a coward boy, but this is Kanchipurna himself. And then Mahapurna said, now you can't stay here. I mean, after I know that you are Kanchipurna, you know, you have direct relationship with Varadaraj, and you're doing seva service to me, I can't allow you to stay here. And then Kanchipurna was sent back to Kanchipuram. And then, of course, Varadaraj, then he said, now you're fit to come back to the spiritual world because you served a devotee. So, there are many other great acharyas whose connection and whose contribution has been amazing. I'll share a few other stories of different acharyas in the Sri Sampradaya. Ramanacharya once, there was actually one devotee, not Ramanacharya, some other story. There was one devotee who asked a question. He said, the Brahmanas are given this Gayatri mantra, and they are engaged in doing deity worship, and they are chanting so many mantras. is there something lacking in us, those who are not Brahmanas, because of which we are not allowed to do all these things? What is wrong with us? Why we are not allowed to do all these things? And this devotee gave a very interesting reply. He said, suppose you have to go to one particular destination, one particular village. And there are two ways, two routes to go to that village. One way to go is you have to walk all the way. And on the way you'll find no drinking water, you'll find no food to eat, and the route is very torturous. And the second way is there's a Pushpak Viman. You sit on the Pushpak Viman, it will take you to your destination very nicely, with all facilities. So he said, just imagine the person who's sitting on the Pushpak Viman, he starts questioning, why I can't walk? Why I can't go through all the trouble? Why I can't go through torture? He said, you should be concerned about reaching the destination. Some people go to take the torturous route, and some people take the simple route. So this devotee, he gave such a simple answer. Sometimes, people who are highly intellectual and highly complicated, they need complicated ways of connecting with God. And those who are simple, they actually saved of so much complication because they get the essence, which is more important. One time, there was a procession of Ranganath and Parashar Bhatta, he happened to be over there. And as the procession of Ranganath, as the deities were taken out on this procession, suddenly a dog entered into the altar of Ranganath. And when the pujaris came, you know, saw this dog entering into the altar, they drove the dog away, of course. And then the pujaris decided to clean the altar thoroughly before getting the deities in. And they did a purificatory ceremony and they cleaned the whole altar with cow urine and cow dung and thoroughly cleaned the altar with water. And then after that, the deities were brought in. So Parashar Bhatta, he was saying, because this dog entered into this altar, there was such a purificatory ceremony done, but I am entering your altar every day. How much purificatory ceremony should be done? You know, he's talking, this is his prayer to Ranganath. He's saying, I am more insignificant than this dog. That is the mood of Parashar Bhatta. One time, Parashar Bhatta was talking to one devotee, and this devotee asked him a question. He said, when Lord Ram was building a bridge across the ocean, before that, the ocean god, he prayed to the ocean god for 3 days. And for 3 days, the ocean god was not coming out only. And Ram got so angry and so upset with the ocean god that he wanted to dry up the whole ocean. But instantly the ocean god appeared and started offering prayers to the Lord. And the moment he offered prayers, Lord Ram's anger went away. So this man, this devotee is asking Parashar Bhatta, what is this? How can this person have such a change in mood suddenly? You know, just now he's so angry and little glorification. Then he forgets all his anger and he's smiling and he's giving benediction. So Parashar Bhatta said, let me tell you a story to explain how the Lord is. You know, he said there was a beggar who once went to a landlord. And, you know, he started going and appreciating the landlord like anything. He said, you are so great. You have such beautiful hair. This fellow was bald. He didn't have hair only on his head. You know? So this beggar is saying, you are so beautiful, so handsome. You have such beautiful hair. The landlord asked him, why you have come over here? The beggar said, I came just to glorify your beauty. The landlord becomes so happy. He gives him a bag of grains. He said, this is for you. So the beggar took the bag of grains. Very happily he was leaving from there. On the way he met a person. So this person, he asked him, where did you get this bag of grains from? And the beggar said, I got it from the bad landlord, you know, Takulu. This fellow came to know what the scene is. So he went to the landlord and told him, just see, this beggar is calling you Takulu and he's calling you all kinds of ill names. So this landlord ran because he realized he made a mistake. He ran to take back the sack of grains. As he ran, the beggar saw him running and he realized what must have happened. As the landlord was coming closer, he started saying, oh my lord, please don't run. Your beautiful hair is flying all directions, you know. The landlord became so happy, he gave him a second bag of rice. So Parashar Bhatta tells this story to this devotee and he says, If a materialistic person, when he's praised, his anger can turn into, you know, affection, what to speak of the Supreme Lord? If you praise him a little bit, you glorify him, naturally all his anger will melt away and it'll turn into love. So like that, there are so many exalted acharyas who have shared their thoughts. I'll end with one or two stories about the Shivaishnav acharyas. One time, Ramanujacharya, as he was going to have a bath in the river. Now, Ramanujacharya had a very peculiar habit of having bath. He would, while he was going to have bath, while he would enter into the river, he would hold the hand of Dasharathi. Dasharathi is a Brahmana, great scholar. But after he finishes his bath, to come out of the river, he will hold the hand of Dhanurdas, who is a Shudra, born in a low-class family. So all the disciples of Ramanujacharya, they were bewildered. They said, ideally, you should hold the hand of Dhanurdas while going in. And after coming out, you should hold the hand of Dasharathi, you know. But Ramanujacharya's understanding was, a person's devotion is not determined by his birth or by his externals, but is determined by the state of heart. And Ramanujacharya therefore did not find any differentiation between any of his disciples based on birth. And that was one of the greatest revolutions that Ramanujacharya created in the South Indian traditions at that point. So, there was one devotee whose name was Nathamuni. And Nathamuni was an expert in Ashtanga Yoga. And he asked one of his disciples, I'll give you two options. His disciple's name was Rama Mishra. He said, you choose between the two options, which option you want to learn. There are two things I want to teach you. One is, I want to teach you Ashtanga Yoga in completeness. And second is, I want to teach you the Divya Prabandhams of the Alwars. You choose what you want to learn. Now, the difference between the two, Divya Prabandham, these are pure devotional poetry, pure devotional poems by the Alwars. And Ashtanga Yoga is a highly complicated process of connecting with the Paramatma. So, Rama Mishra, he gave a very interesting reply. He said, how can I marry when I'm surrounded by dead bodies? Nathamuni didn't understand what he's trying to say. He said, what do you mean? He said, the people in the material world are like living dead bodies. They're all living, but they're all dead bodies. He said that all these dead bodies have forgotten their connection with Krishna. He said, how do you expect me to unite with Krishna, with marry Krishna, while surrounded by all dead bodies around me? So he said, I don't want to learn the Ashtanga Yoga process. I don't want to develop my connection with Krishna on a personal level. But I want to study the Divya Prabandham so that I can inspire common man. So Divya Prabandham are very simple Tamil poetry which, you know, the Alwars would actually inspire regular people with. And common people can understand. Ashtanga Yoga is very highly complicated. The common man can't understand. You can't preach Ashtanga Yoga. What is happening in the name of yoga today is just asanas. But the whole process of Ashtanga Yoga is a highly complex process which gives you perfection of life, actually. Connection with Paramatma directly. So, Nathamuni, he was very impressed with his disciple Rama Mishra's mindset. These exalted Sri Vishnu Acharyas, South Indian Acharyas, have so much to share through their lives, through their teachings, and through their mood. All of us are trying to practice the process of Bhakti Yoga, the process of Krishna Consciousness in our personal lives. But one of the most important things for us to be able to practice Krishna Consciousness properly is the right attitude. The process is easy, but having the right attitude is difficult. Speaking, hours and hours about the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam is easy. But actually living it in your personal lives is very difficult. when we look at the life of all these exalted acharyas and we see the mood with which they're preaching, the mood with which they're living their lives, and more than the mood that with which they relate to one another, their love for the spiritual master, their love for the deities, their love for the process of preaching, and more than that, their utter humility in spite of being so exalted, in spite of having direct connection with the Lord, talking with the Lord, but still having this mood of serving the devotees and serving the Vaishnavas. That's something that we need to learn. We have learned a lot about the process of Krishna consciousness, but it's time that we also spend some time learning the attitude behind practicing Krishna consciousness through these great acharyas of the Sri Sampradaya. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.